Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening today, everybody. Now we continue our 30 Issues election series, Issue 19, Presidents and Abortion Rights. Yesterday, we did an audio history of the issue, a history in sound. You can still hear it on our website at WNYC.org. Fascinating stuff there, including part of the actual oral argument in Roe versus Wade before the Supreme Court in the early 70s. Today, we'll compare the candidates on the issue and talk about what aspects of abortion rights the next president might have a say in expanding or limiting. One issue relevant to the news right now is the Zika virus. The main thing that makes the Zika virus fearsome, as most of you know, is that severe birth defects, particularly microcephaly, might result. That's why pregnant women are supposed to avoid the virus. But vice presidential candidate Mike Pence is on record supporting a ban on abortions being sought because of fetal abnormalities. He signed a law to that effect in Indiana, where he's the governor, although that law is on hold due to a court ruling. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, the former presidential hopeful now running for re-election, says specifically no abortions for Zika-infected women with deformed fetuses if he gets his way. Let's talk about this aspect first. Then we'll compare Clinton and Trump more generally with Jennifer Habercorn, who covers this issue as a health reporter for Politico. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
I see you wrote an article this week called How Zika Could Change the Politics of Late-Term Abortion. What's your thesis?
Mm-hmm. Well, so this virus, as you were saying, it could cause microcephaly, which is a horribly sad condition in which a baby is born with severe brain abnormalities and a shrunken head. And those are really the only effects that we know about so far. The issue with microcephaly is that it's not spotted in pregnancy until about 20 weeks into the pregnancy, and sometimes even later. Some of the smart folks that I've talked to are expecting is, unfortunately, there's going to be women probably in Florida, because that's where Zika is right now, who get this diagnosis after 20 weeks of pregnancy. And in some cases, microcephaly can be so severe in which a physician may suggest that abortion is an option. Late-term abortion is something that the public very much opposes, and obviously it's typically it comes up in the circumstances of a woman who wanted a child, and this was a wanted pregnancy, but there is a very severe fetal condition in which a physician may say that abortion is an option, or even an encouraged option. So I think what Zika could do is just bring to light the conditions under which late-term abortion happens, which is usually a very ethically complicated situation, and just kind of bring those stories to the forefront in a way that the public typically doesn't see.
And this could be a presidential issue because, as we heard in our history segment yesterday, President Bill Clinton vetoed a bill that Congress had passed to ban a particular late-term abortion procedure that the opponents call partial birth abortion. Then when George Bush became president, they passed the same bill and he signed it. So it really does matter who the president is to this kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. And we're already seeing quite a little bit of that on the campaign trail. Hillary Clinton in particular has come out very early in her candidacy as a very strong proponent for abortion rights. And it's interesting kind of comparing how she talks about the issue this year with how she talked about it in 2008. She didn't talk about it in quite as strong terms.
Right, and I want to hold off on that for a second, and we'll get to that when we talk about Trump and Clinton generally. But just staying on the Zika track for the moment, Marco Rubio seems to be evidence that some views might not change all that much. Do you see his no abortions ever and kind of going out of his way to make a point about no exceptions for Zika as indicative of the party as a whole?
Um, I, I don't think so. I mean, Marco Rubio has always been very opposed to abortion in almost all circumstances. So I wasn't surprised to hear him say that he doesn't think abortion should be allowed even in cases of Zika. I would put him at the far right of the Republican Party on this issue. That being said, I don't think Zika is going to change anyone's mind. If they are opposed to abortion, I don't think they're going to change their mind dramatically.
Do you know if Trump has been asked to support or refute Rubio's absolutist position on that?
I have not heard him weigh in on this issue or Marco Rubio's position.
And how about Pence? Because he signed a law banning abortions being sought because of fetal abnormalities. But that was a few months ago, before Zika became a thing. Any reason to think that Pence would waver?
No, I would put Pence in almost the exact same category as Marco Rubio, very opposed to abortion and very prominent on the issue. Like you said earlier, he signed the law in Indiana to prohibit abortion in cases of fetal abnormality. This would be, a fetal abnormality, so I would assume that he'd be against abortion in these situations as well.
Could that potentially be an issue for the federal government? The kind of ban for fetal abnormalities, that kind of law that Pence signed as governor of Indiana, if there's a Republican president and a Republican Congress, maybe this is just complete speculation, but do you see that as on the agenda of the Republicans or the pro-life movement to get that through federally if there's a Republican president and a Republican Congress?
I don't see that right now, but if Zika continues to be the issue that it is, that could become a priority of the pro-life movement. Right now, their main priority legislatively is a ban on abortion at 20 weeks. Obviously, that butts up to the conversation on Zika because it isn't diagnosed until then. But that's their main legislative priority right now. And number two would be defunding Planned Parenthood. So I don't see those changing. But even if there is a Republican president and a Republican Congress, there are not 60 votes in the Senate to pass this kind of legislation. There's just not 60 pro-life senators. Mm-hmm. And even if there is a Republican majority, there are still one or two Republicans who I don't see supporting something like this. At the same time, I see one or two Democrats potentially supporting this, but I don't think it would get close to the 60 needed to pass legislation.
Right. And of course, it's 60 because in the Senate, everything gets filibustered these days if it's controversial. So it's more than 50% plus one. I saw a tweet of yours that said anti-abortion laws passed after the Planned Parenthood sting videos may be thwarting Zika research. What's the link there?
So Zika, the research into a vaccine is based a lot on fetal tissue. And the videos last summer, the Planned Parenthood sting videos, focused a lot on the fetal tissue.
Right, transfers post-abortions into the research labs. Do you happen to know if the effect of that has been to actually reduce the amount of fetal tissue research because now it's harder to make those transfers of tissue?
The researchers say it has the potential to hurt them. So far, I haven't seen anyone saying, there is definitively cause for concern. Fetal tissue research is still happening in this country, but the researchers who do it are, reasonably nervous about doing it just after seeing the fallout from the Planned Parenthood videos and even beyond just the immediate fallout. There's been lawsuits trying to get the names of these researchers. So there's definitely a bit of a freeze on the research. And perhaps that's something that I should follow up on that tweet and find out more from the researchers, whether they can determine a link right now, if the Zika vaccine actually would be closer to development had there not be this kind of chill.
Yeah, that would be an interesting follow-up. Jennifer Habercorn, health reporter for Politico, is my guest as we continue our 30 Issues election series. It's issue 19 this week, Presidents and Abortion Rights. And all right, let's step back and listen to what Trump and Clinton have been saying in public about abortion rights generally. Donald Trump's basic position on abortion rights has, let's say, evolved. Here is Trump on Meet the Press in 1999.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But you still, I just believe in choice.
But here is Trump on MSNBC in March of this year answering questions from host Chris Matthews.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no? As a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 years?
I don't
what?
Know. That I don't know. That
well, why
I don't
not?
Know.
That answer created a firestorm, and Trump walked it back. Many of you followed this in the news at the time. He changed to say it's really doctors or other providers who should face punishment. It was an example of not only a possible harshness in dealing with women, his initial impulse in that response, or other people whose actions he judges negatively, but also that he's not up to speed on the details of ongoing policy debates. The official pro-life groups do not say punish the woman, and he then conformed to their official line in that retraction. Hillary Clinton has changed, too, if more subtly. From her first lady years through her 2008 campaign, Clinton used the term safe, legal, and rare for her policy goals for abortion. Safe, legal, and rare. Like she did in this 2008 campaign appearance.
We can support a woman's right to choose that makes abortion safe, legal, and rare, and reduces the number of abortions.
But for this campaign, she has tweaked it, removing the word rare from her usual reference. Her campaign website, the issues page on this, just as safe and legal. And here's an example from an interview on Face the Nation in February.
I've been on record for years about where I stand on making abortion safe and legal, the exceptions that are appropriate that should be looked into, and the very difficult choices that a very few women have to confront that lead to excruciating kinds of decisions.
So, Jennifer Habercorn from Politico, and you were starting to say before that Clinton's language has changed on the issue. Is this specifically what you were referring to or something else?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Also, just her tone. In 2008, she rarely talked about reproductive health issues. But this cycle, she has just fully embraced her role as the first female presidential candidate, but also as kind of the champion of women's reproductive health. And she has made firm that she wants to be at the forefront of this. And that's evident because Planned Parenthood supported her in the primary for the first time in its history. They supported a candidate in the primary. She's fully embraced the repeal of the Hyde Amendment, which is the prohibition that's been in effect for years on federal money going toward abortion. These women's health groups, such as Planned Parenthood, have fully embraced Clinton, and she in turn has fully embraced her role as the champion of reproductive health. So it's definitely a difference, not only from 08, but like the clip showed, from her years during her husband's presidency, when safe, legal, and rare was kind of the mantra.
Why do you think she would take out the word rare? Does that make a political point, or does that just acknowledge the reality that abortion is actually very common in this country, or, you know, and may need to stay very common in order to keep it legal, that those two have to go together? Or why do you think she would just take out that one word?
Well, there's been a real movement among abortion rights advocates to get rid of the stigma around abortion and try to normalize the idea of abortion as a medical procedure. There are statistics that show that by the time a woman's 45, there's a 1 in 3 chance that she's had an abortion, but it's really not talked about. And so they want to try to reduce the stigma around abortion. So they don't want it to be seen as something rare and unusual and something that shame should be around. They want to try to normalize it. So I would think that she's kind of taken her cue from them and eliminated that word from the phrase, and now it's safe and legal.
On the two other policy issues that you mentioned, the Hyde Amendment and Planned Parenthood, Trump, during the primaries, said he's against abortion and he's against funding that would go for abortions, but that Planned Parenthood does other good things. And he was different than most of the other Republicans in the primary debates. Do you know if he has a very clear, specific position on if he would defund Planned Parenthood from its current levels if he was president and had that power?
Yes, he has committed to defunding Planned Parenthood and enacting a 20-week abortion ban, like we were saying earlier. That's the key legislative goal of the anti-abortion movement right now. So he has committed to both of those legislative priorities, and that's kind of why the anti-abortion groups have supported Trump. During the primary, they were basically anybody but Trump, and really the rest of the Republican field was so much further to the right on this issue than Donald Trump. And so there was a time when anti-abortion groups, actually a group of them wrote a letter saying, it was directed to Iowa primary voters saying, vote for anybody but Trump because he is not right on this issue. Obviously that changed once he became the presumptive nominee, and very specifically it changed when he signed on to defunding Planned Parenthood, this 20-week abortion ban, and nominating pro-life judges to the Supreme Court, because obviously that's another priority of the anti-abortion movement. So we've really seen Trump kind of win over the anti-abortion groups. And that's probably because, you know, they're a very important part of the Republican base, and Trump or folks on his campaign realize that they really need those voters to turn out, because folks who feel very strongly about abortion do vote, and it's often their number one issue, and Trump really needed them.
And the Hyde Amendment, which restricts federal funding for abortions, I guess that's primarily Medicaid funding for
right.
abortions for poor women, right?
Yes, that's right. I have not heard Trump specifically address the Hyde Amendment. I would assume, just based on his statements on abortion lately, that he would support keeping the Hyde Amendment.
Have you looked at Trump's change of position on the basic question of abortion rights, how he went from being pro-choice in that clip we played from Meet the Press in 1999 to thinking that a woman should be punished as a criminal today until they made him walk it back?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting. And I think what was most interesting to me about that MSNBC clip that you played when he said women should be punished for getting an abortion was how quickly he walked it back. And it was one of the rare circumstances in this campaign where Trump has reversed himself on an issue and so quickly. And I think that, again, goes to the point of how important the pro-life voter is to the Republican nominee. And I think that became very clear when, you know, this was one of the few things that he essentially apologized for. And then in terms of how his position has changed, he did describe in the early 2000s that he had a close friend who had a man who his significant other had an unexpected pregnancy, and they were not looking forward to having a child, but they decided to maintain the pregnancy and have the child, and the man was very happy about it. And that seeing that situation has changed his mind on abortion. Other than that, he hasn't gotten too in-depth on the issue. And I think that's one of the things that kind of frustrated the pro-life movement, is they want to hear conviction in their nominee's voice when he or she talks about this issue, and hear, you know, kind of the lines that we hear often is the importance of protecting that life in utero. And Trump really has not spoken like that, at least in the course of this campaign.
And just to articulate the Democratic side of the Hyde Amendment question, that would be something like the Supreme Court says all women have a right to an abortion, but without Medicaid funding, the Congress says poor women do not actually have that right, right? That's how the Democrats argue to repeal the Hyde Amendment.
Exactly, and they argue that it disproportionately affects minority women And that's why they're really campaigning to get rid of it.
And the last thing that we should mention before we wrap this up is the most obvious way a president can impact abortion rights, which is with their Supreme Court appointments. Mm-hmm. Will their nominees vote to retain or overturn Roe, which one could argue always hangs by a thread? Have they both made it a specific litmus test, do you know?
Trump has said that he would nominate, quote, pro-life justices. And his list of judicial nominees, which he released a couple months ago, was fully embraced by anti-abortion groups. So that does pretty much, and that was interestingly, I have not heard another Republican nominee in the past specifically say pro-life justices. So he went very far to assure his base that he would do so. Clinton has not said that specifically that she would appoint justices who support abortion rights, but her comments have made clear that that issue is important to her. You know, in previous election cycles, presidential nominees have been reluctant to, you know, identify a litmus test on an issue, but this one, at least on the Republican side, has been a little more prominent.
And on the Democratic side, too, I think that Hillary Clinton has gone further than candidates have in the past in stating a number of litmus tests. And she said, I'll make sure a Supreme Court justice supports women's rights and LGBT rights. And is, I think she has said, is opposed to Citizens United. And I guess mm-hmm. when she says women's rights, she's suggesting, well, what women's rights come before the Supreme Court? One of the big ones is, of course, abortion rights. So she's kind of suggesting it, I think, without saying it.
Yeah, it was just kind of a veiled comment.
Yeah. Jennifer Habercorn, senior healthcare reporter for Politico. So informative. Thank you very much.
It was great to talk with you.
And that's our 30 Issues election series for this week. Issue 19, Presidents and Abortion Rights. Next week, Issue 20, How to Get Money Out of Politics, Excessive Money Out of Politics, While Citizens United is Still in Effect. That's next week.